There's a town on a lake not far from here. We got good coffee shops and plenty of beers. It's Simply Superior.
Coming up on Simply Superior. How is Hibbing, Minnesota connected to Montgomery, Alabama? The answer is on a Greyhound bus traveling through history. Plus,
I know it ain't easy to hear my woes and sorrows.
He's a local educator, activist, and troubadour dropping his first album.
But in this life, there ain't no rhyme or reason.
We'll hear the music of Danny Frank. Those stories and the regional news and review after this.
There's a town on a lake not far from here. We got good coffee shops and plenty of beers. It's Simply Superior. There's a show.
How is Hibbing, Minnesota connected to Montgomery, Alabama? The answer is on a Greyhound bus traveling through history. Plus,
I know it ain't easy to hear my woes and sorrows.
He's a local educator, activist, and troubadour dropping his first album.
But in this life, there ain't no rhyme or reason.
We'll hear the music of Danny Frank. Welcome to Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington. 60 years ago today, a small group of Americans, black and white, were riding in a Greyhound bus in Alabama. Their intention was merely to show that they could ride together, sitting side by side, and using the same integrated amenities at the bus stations. In Anniston, Alabama, they were met by those equally intent on stopping their journey and their quest for simple human dignity. Their bus was firebombed, and the Freedom Riders barely escaped with their lives. Yet the rides would go on, as well as more attacks on the riders and into the pages of American history. Now, a bit of that history has been replicated with the restoration of another bus of the exact model and year of manufacture. It was unveiled last week at the Freedom Rides Museum in Montgomery, Alabama, and it has a special connection to our area. And, well, to me. Here to help tell us about it is Dorothy Walker, the Executive Director of the Freedom Rides Museum. Welcome to Simply Superior, Dorothy.
Thank you for having me.
Well, first, tell us about the museum, what it is and how it got to be.
Okay. Well, the Freedom Rides Museum is located in Montgomery's historic Greyhound bus station. When it was built, it was designed to be and built as a segregated facility. In the late 60s, Greyhound reconfigured the building for integration and operated the building until the mid-1990s. In the mid-90s, Greyhound moved out. They built another facility on the outskirts of town.
Mm-hmm.
And so this building becomes vacant, and the U.S. Federal Courthouse next to us, which was built in the 1930s, it's a beautiful building. The General Services Administration that maintains that federal building for the government purchased this building from the Greyhound Corporation. And the intention for that purchase was to demolish it. And so the Alabama Historical Commission, the State Historic Preservation Office that I work for, we led an effort with other voices in the community and across the state and across the country to try to save the building from complete demolition. And we were successful in that we were able to enter into a negotiation with the federal government to maintain a portion of the building. We are fortunate that the portion of the building we were able to maintain is the historic core of the building that was built in 1951. So we have intact some of the segregated entrances, as well as some of the tile on the interior of the building. And Greyhound worked with us to give us a vintage, some vintage signage. The Greyhound sign outside is a real neon, lights up at night, as well as the Running Dog sign. So we entered into this lease agreement with the General Services Administration in the year 2000. And in 2008, we got enough funding to place an exhibit on the exterior of the building that chronicled the history of the Freedom Rides. And then in 2011, the 50th anniversary of the Freedom Rides, we were able to get enough money together to open the museum. So 2021, in addition to representing the 60th anniversary of the Freedom Rides, also represents the 10th anniversary of the opening of the museum.
Mm-hmm. And I want to reiterate what you said about the segregated facilities, because most people should be familiar with Rosa Parks and the segregated seating on Montgomery's city buses. But the intercity and interstate bus terminals also had segregated facilities, so that there was a white waiting room, a black waiting room, and as you mentioned, the bathrooms as well.
Exactly. A lot of people come to Montgomery knowing the story of the Montgomery bus boycott and the courageous action of Mrs. Rosa Parks, who refused to give up her seat on the Montgomery City bus. And of course, know that, you know, the Supreme Court ultimately ruled to outlaw that segregated seating on Montgomery City buses. However, there had been a case prior to Mrs. Parks' arrest in 1955. There had been a case of Irene Morgan in 1944, in Virginia, in Saluda, Virginia, she was an African-American who refused to move to give up her seat on a Greyhound bus to white passengers. And she was arrested, and her case went all the way to the Supreme Court. And the Supreme Court, in her case, ruled in her favor in 1946 in the case of Morgan versus Virginia, outlawing segregated seating on the interstate buses, you know, 10 years before the Supreme Court would hear the case and outlaw the seating on the Montgomery City buses.
Right. But that ruling affected the buses themselves and not the facilities, the waiting rooms and the bathrooms.
That's correct. It would take another case. Bruce Boynton, who was from Selma, he's arrested in 1958 in Richmond, Virginia, and his case goes to the Supreme Court. And in 1960, the Supreme Court ruled that segregating the passengers and interstate transit terminals, whether it be bus stations or whatever, that was unconstitutional. So by the time the Freedom Riders arrived in 1961, all of the segregation in interstate travel had been outlawed by the Supreme Court, but was not being enforced.
We're speaking with Dorothy Walker, the executive director of the Freedom Rides Museum in Montgomery, Alabama. So tell us about the bus, now that we know something about the bus station, or maybe I should tell a little bit about the story, because I'll tell our listeners that you and I first met 3 years ago, just about this mm-hmm. time, when I came to Montgomery with the delegation from Duluth's Clayton Jackson McGee Memorial to the opening of the National Memorial for Peace and Justice, both of those mm-hmm. memorials for the victims of lynching. And I stopped in, and at that time, we had a wonderful conversation, and I think I was just leaving when somehow either you or I brought up something about a bus, and you said, oh yeah, we just got one. So tell us what you got at that time.
Sure. I think you and maybe others of your listeners are going to be familiar with the Greyhound Bus Museum. Greyhound, of course, got started in Hibbing, Minnesota. And several years ago, one of the things we were talking about is it'd be great to, we're in a bus station, it'd be great to have a vintage bus to go along with the bus station. So I was tasked with reaching out to see if I could find a bus to purchase, a bus of the vintage that the Freedom Riders rode in 1961. So I reached out to a number of locations, and eventually I did not know there was a Greyhound Bus Museum, but doing the research online, I came across it. And I called and I was like, you know, we're looking for a vintage Greyhound bus to add to the museum collection. Wanted to know if you knew of one that might be for sale. And I spoke with someone there at the Greyhound Bus Museum who said, we can do you one better. We have a bus here that is the same vintage that we are not utilizing at the moment. And we would be, you know, honored to donate it to you guys. And so that was like beyond my wildest dreams. I was looking for a bus to purchase, and here was someone giving us a bus for free.
Right, well, the exact same one.
the exact same bus that we were looking for to purchase. So it was really great and really generous of them to donate the bus to us for free.
So I want to go back to that backstory and to tell people that it was not an accident that the Greyhound Bus Museum had that exact same bus, because they had asked me to help them curate a Freedom Rides exhibit at the Greyhound Bus Museum. One of my works is a documentary on a Freedom Ride that took place much earlier in 1947, exactly about the Irene Morgan case that you mentioned. And in fact, we had Irene Morgan in the program, and I got to know her and really remained friends with her for the rest of her life. So someone who knows the story of the bus's history at the Greyhound Bus Museum is Ron Dicklich, the executive director of the Greyhound Bus Museum. I spoke with him the other day, and here's part of our conversation. We are talking to Ronald Dicklich. He's a former state senator, am I correct, from Hibbing, Minnesota, right?
Correct, yeah.
And more recently, you've been the volunteer executive director of the Greyhound Bus Museum in Hibbing.
Yeah, since 2013.
Well, you have many, many buses at the Greyhound Bus Museum, and the story of one of them goes back a little more than 10 years ago when I wrote a column about the museum for the Duluth News Tribune, and I said it's a great little museum except it's missing one thing, probably the most important thing ever happened on a Greyhound bus, being the Freedom Rides. Mm-hmm. So a couple years later, Gene Nicolelli, who was the founder and driving force behind the museum, which is a huge understatement.
Yeah, it was his goal in life. He just never quit.
That's the best way of describing Gene. He never quit.
Never quit. Right. Never quit.
So he called me up and he said, you know what? The board agrees with you and we want to have an exhibit and we want you to curate it. And I said, okay. When we were talking about the exhibit, in all seriousness, I said, or I think we both got the idea, what if we had the exact model of the bus that was bombed in Alabama and we set it on fire? So he located one, or as you know, the volunteers involved got the word out. And when it showed up, it didn't have any seats in it.
No,
it didn't. Right. And we looked and it had a plywood floor. And I said, this would make a pretty good exhibit itself. We could put the exhibit inside.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why we didn't set it on fire. So
yeah.
kind of important that we didn't. Yeah.
Well, yeah, it is, because the burning thing being over big with the board.
You're saying the board wouldn't have gone for that.
No, it was kind of, but the idea of doing exhibits inside the bus, because it was wide open, whether they're video or audio or whatever, to tell the story.
Right.
That was just the main idea.
Right. But unfortunately, it remained an idea, because although Gene had gotten $12,000 from Greyhound for it, I understand, and we started making drawings and even got an architect interested in it, Gene wasn't able to see it through.
Yeah. And so the reason I got involved was, unfortunately, as you know, Gene had a stroke, and they were going to close the museum. He had the stroke in November. I remember the day I saw him, I talked to him in the grocery store like 3 days before the stroke, and he gave me his update of what was going on with the museum and all projects, and he mentioned the project you're calling me about. And actually, my son had become city administrator, and so on. He said, well, you know, they're talking about closing the museum, so he said, would you go in and run it for a couple of years? And I said, sure. And then, of course, he passed away in January of 2014.
Right. At the same time, I left the Duluth News Tribune, which was part of our old planning. And then there was Mike Marconet was his more or less assistant, who got into a serious car accident at the time, too.
Yeah, well, he died that winter, too, before. That's why they were going to shut it down.
So, needless to say, our plans for the Freedom Ride exhibit didn't quite materialize.
Yeah.
But then at a certain point, you got a call from Dorothy Walker at the Freedom Rides Museum.
Yes, and she had called me to see if I knew of anywhere there was any of that model bus. And I just, you know, we had it because that was going to be the project. And, you know, my educational background is I have a double major in history and political science. And I'm thinking, wow, you know, I get a project right there where it actually happened. And so I worked with her to donated the bus. the unfortunate thing is I told her, I said, you know, well, maybe we should look to have some work done up here. And, you know, they want it down there. So they shipped it all the way down there. And then they found out they had to do the refurbishing work. Guess where?
Oh, it was back in Minnesota.
Yeah.
Right.
All right. See you in Dorothy for me.
And that was Ron Dicklich, executive director of the Greyhound Bus Museum in Hibbing, Minnesota, telling his side of the story of the sister bus to the one that was firebombed in Alabama during the Freedom Rides. We're speaking with Dorothy Walker, executive director of the Freedom Rides Museum in Montgomery, Alabama. Pick up the story from your end of it.
Okay. So we went through all the channel to get the bus to Montgomery. We had it towed here. We had you know, much fanfare when the bus arrived, and here we have this artifact, and we're going to restore it to what it was like in when the Freedom Rides happened in 1961. And we were like, now we just need to reach out and find somebody who can actually restore it. So we reached out across the country, and lo and behold, the company that we ended up with was ABC Companies in Faribault, Minnesota. So we had to load the bus back up and ship it back to Minnesota, where it's been for the last almost 2 years, where they've been restoring it.
Oh, so you just got it back?
Yes, yes. Well, it's back. We got it back last week. It is for the bus enthusiasts. I know there are bus enthusiasts out there. It is a GMC, you know, PD4104, and it did not have air conditioning back then, but we were able to add air to it, and so it has air and heat. The people in Faribault were able to find vintage seats for it and the vintage luggage racks, and so they restored it completely to its appearance in the 1960s, and Greyhound was generous to let us put the insignia back on the bus.
So you told us a bit about the restoration. You did put the seats back in.
We did. We were very excited that they found seats from the period. They went out and sourced all this stuff. Also, you know, when we started planning this, we sent the bus to ABC Companies. It left Montgomery in July of 2019. We had no idea that a pandemic was going to hit in the middle of all of this. And so here we are with this bus project. We have a defined date that we're trying to get it done by, because, you know, the 60th is only going to come one time. You know, we can't like exactly put that off to the next year. And so we were just hoping that they could, you know, still find all the things they needed for this. And they scrambled and they found everything. And so we are just very thankful to them for taking so much care and taking so much time and effort to put this bus, taking it all down to nothing. Like you said, it was just a driver's seat and nothing else. We certainly are really excited about the opportunity to have this. It'll be a mobile extension of the museum, so it'll travel to schools and other cultural sites and events, as well as to other cities and communities across the country. So we're pretty excited about that opportunity.
And is Minnesota on the itinerary, and Wisconsin, since it's on the way?
Well, it certainly can be. It certainly can be. We have Freedom Riders still in Minnesota. It's going to Tennessee and going to Georgia. Of course, it's going to be traveling here in the state. So it has a pretty full itinerary through the month of May. But I don't see any reason why we can't put it on the road, you know, in some other times of the year, because for your listeners, I was one of, you know, most of the events, the most visible parts of the story of the Freedom Rides that people remember, you know, the physical attacks, the firebomb bus, all that kind of thing kind of happened in May of 1961. So May of this year, of course, there's lots of events that are happening across the country to commemorate the moment. But we didn't want to resign everything to a 1 month. And so we decided we're going to commemorate the full year and all the events that took place or had any connection to it. Let's look at all of those events. I know y'all get snow, so maybe not too late in the year.
Right, but right. The summer might be the best time. And by the way, June 3rd is the 75th anniversary of the Supreme Court's decision in the Irene Morgan case. So another reason to celebrate. Continuing the story of the Freedom Rides in 1961, after the bombing in Anniston, Alabama, that particular group flew on to New Orleans, which was their destination, and did not continue on the buses. But a student group picked up from Nashville and got on buses, and they arrived at your location in Montgomery, Alabama, the old bus station, on May 20th, which the 60th anniversary will be next week. And what's planned for that?
Well, we plan to commemorate the moment of the arrival of those student freedom riders that arrived here and were attacked by an angry mob. So we will have, we're partnering with the director of the movie Son of the South, and we will have freedom riders who were here in 1961, along with some cast members talking about portraying them, those freedom riders in the movie, but just sort of reflecting on the moment 60 years later.
Great. We've been talking to Dorothy Walker, the executive director of the Freedom Rides Museum in Montgomery, Alabama, the new home of a bus that was formerly in Hibbing, Minnesota, and may well be back for a visit. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Coming up, a local troubadour drops his first album.
I was walking down a long and lonesome road. I've been thinking about all the things that I believe and everything that I've been told. You see, there's clowns to the left of me and jokers to the right. When you came into my life, baby, my heart just skipped a beat.
Welcome back to Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington. Our special on the Northwoods League baseball season opening last week meant we didn't bring you another annual sign of spring, the Twin Ports Homegrown Music Festival, which was held mostly online this year. But don't fret, we've got one of those performers right here, who you can also hear occasionally opening our show with his alternative Simply Superior theme. Danny Frank is a singer-songwriter with a secret identity as director of Trio Student Support Services at the University of Wisconsin-Superior. He's active in many civic and volunteer causes, both with his guitar and without, and as strictly an entertainer, has performed at numerous venues throughout the area. And today, he drops his first album, Smoky Gold, on which he's joined by performers from the infamous String Dusters, Kind Country, Feeling Leroy, and others, along with his solo performances. Welcome to Simply Superior, Danny Frank.
Thank you. Good to be here.
And who are some of those others?
Some of the others are Eli Frieders from a band called Armchair Boogie, and Jamie Gallagher from a band out of Chicago called Dead Horses.
So I take it that your various pursuits, from the classroom to your outdoors classrooms that you used to have at Northland College, to the bar rooms where you sing and the city halls where you testify, they all inform each other or not? Or do you clone yourself into different Danny Franks?
You know, I like to think that I can be in multiple places at the same time, but I've found it's very difficult. One of the things that I would say sort of binds those various identities in me together is, you know, a really rich desire to understand sense of place as well as community. And so, I find that my work in outdoor education and understanding the natural world and how groups operate spills over into my civic work in the community and understanding how, you know, community systems function and institutions and organizations operate. And all of those things, you know, often fuel my creativity and songwriting and vice versa. It kind of flows between the three. So, I see it all fitting together and coming together in really odd ways sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Do people ever wonder if you're the same guy? Maybe a student has you in class and then they go to City Hall for whatever reason and there you are, you know, making an impassioned plea about something entirely different.
Oh, absolutely. It's funny. A friend of mine recently said, made comment to a mutual friend that we have, oh, Danny's got an album coming out. And the response was, no, it must be a different Danny Frank. He doesn't play music. So she knew me as a community activist and as an outdoor educator, member of the Jewish community and other places. But she never knew that I had any musical talent. I'm not sure that I do, but, you know, at least I like to think so.
Well, we'll prove them otherwise as people listen to your songs in a minute. And the TRIO program, what is that at the University of Wisconsin-Superior?
Yeah, so the TRIO is a federally funded program that supports first-generation college students, students with disabilities, students that face different barriers coming into college. And so in our particular program at UWS, we do tutoring and supplemental advising and mentoring with students to really help them, you know, succeed in college. So it's very fun and rewarding work. I miss the outdoor education work for sure, but, you know, I really feel like I'm making a difference in this role.
Well, you know, I don't know if your old job is open or not, but how do you get to be a professor of outdoor education, and what do I have to do to get that job?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know,
it sounds like not to sell you short here, but you know, it sounds like, okay, class, it's a nice day. Let's go outside today. A little more than that or no?
You know, there's a fair amount of that. I mean, it really is, you know, outdoor education is a field of study and practice that's squarely, you know, in the sort of realm of experiential education. And it comes from a long tradition of schools like Outward Bound and the National Outdoor Leadership School and, you know, programs that are really geared towards taking students out into the elements, out into situations where there's, you know, perceived and actual, you know, physical risk, social risk, emotional risk, and helping to connect people with each other, connect people with the places that they're traveling, you know, and ultimately come out being better able to sort of be stewards within their own communities and learning some academic skills along the way. And so, you know, my background was participating in, you know, outdoor adventure programs as a teenager, and I really decided that that was something I wanted to do for a living, and I found out, hey, I can get a degree in it. And so now, 20 years later, I've got a doctorate in education, and you know, I can sit in the classroom and philosophize and talk about history and teaching methodologies and, you know, do research, but I can also paddle a canoe with the best of them. So it's a good balance.
All right. We are speaking to a philosopher, canoe paddler, singer-songwriter, and many other professions, Danny Frank. And before we get to your story of how you became a singer-songwriter, let's hear a song that reflects your activism. How about that? This would be obvious to anyone in the Twin Ports by his name. The name is Clayton Jackson McGee. But in this song, I noticed you tell the story from a different point of view or different points of view, and you're not limiting it to what happened 101 years ago.
Sure. So a little over a year ago, I set out to write a song to commemorate the, you know, the upcoming 100-year anniversary of the hanging, the lynching of Clayton Jackson and McGee in Duluth. And as I was writing the song, I was struck by the fact that 10,000 people came out to watch this take place. And so among that was, you know, parents and their children, families came out and made an event of it. And so in telling that story, just thinking about the sort of voyeurism that ensues oftentimes in those types of situations. And so the third verse had yet to be written. And unfortunately, I was inspired to write that third verse by the murder of George Floyd last year in May. And so that third verse, you know, parallels the two stories, both lynchings 101 years ago and the killing of George Floyd.
Right. Let's hear it. Clayton Jackson McGee by Danny Frank.
Well, time is rolling and it just stopped snowing. Well, summer's unfolding and that circus is in town. Well, I took my family down just to see that big old tent. And later on, went downtown to catch that main event. Well, the story of that day gets kind of foggy. But they dragged them from the jailhouse late that night. And 10,000 people gathered beneath the streetlight while Clayton Jackson and McGee were hung to die. Well, I ain't no racist and I ain't been many places, but I know a bad egg when I see one rolling around. Well, I guess they must have done it, and I'm sure they had it coming. I guess they should have stayed the hell away from this old town. Well, the story of that day gets kind of foggy, but they dragged them from the jailhouse late that night, and 10,000 people gathered beneath the streetlights while Clayton Jackson and McGee were hung to die. And ain't nobody stopped the showing. They knelt down on his neck for a $20 check. The news said it's a shame, but it's just bad apples, it ain't the tree. So we stand here doing nothing while they're screaming, I can't breathe. It's all the same, ain't nothing changed. 100 years have passed and ain't nobody take the blame. A blue line of silence covers up the violence. We gotta make a change today, we can no longer look away. Well, the story of that day gets kind of foggy, but they dragged them from the jailhouse late that night, and 10,000 people gathered beneath the streetlights while Clayton Jackson and McGee were hung to die. Well, the story of that day gets kind of foggy, but they dragged them from the jailhouse late that night, and 10,000 people gathered beneath the streetlights while Clayton Jackson and McGee were hung to die.
Certainly not cheerful, but yes, that was Clayton Jackson McGee by Danny Frank, who, if you missed the Homegrown Music Festival last week, or even if you didn't, is gracing us with this music right here. I said earlier you had composed one of the theme songs for our show, and you were officially, by the way, the runner-up in the contest we had for it. We liked it, but you told me more recently that it wasn't your best work because, all right, you tell us what was happening when you wrote it.
Sure. Well, I was actually at a music festival down in Cancun, and so I remember I had gotten a reminder email about the deadline for the songwriting competition, and it was unfortunately like the next day, and we were on the last day of the festival. So I went back in the hotel room between a couple of the sets of music that were playing, and did my best to try to put it down on my iPhone. But you know, there were a fair amount of margaritas involved, so I probably, you know, my creative energy was flowing. But you know, typically when I
so were the margaritas, more, yes,
yeah, right. Exactly.
Well, we'll certainly excuse that. One of the reasons the winner was chosen, Bruce Nelson, was that, well, he probably wasn't hanging around in bars in Mexico, and if he was, he didn't tell us about it. But he wrote lyrics that were specific to the show rather than just simply superior about the town or about the lake. And so out of the blue the other day, I don't know, maybe in anticipation of our conversation, some lyrics came to me, and,
nice.
Which this is probably a bad idea, but this is one of the very few times you'll hear me sing on a radio or anywhere in public, okay? So here we go. This is your second verse. There's a show that's playing on your radio about places to see and people you know. It's simply join me here. Superior. All right. Well, I don't know. Can you work with that?
I think, you know, I think we could probably make something work on that. That might be, you know, on its way to a Grammy or something. So.
Especially if you sing it rather than me. So, well, let's get back to your real music. Now, here's one called Ain't Easy. What ain't easy?
Yeah, it's interesting there. You know, this particular song is sort of an homage to my wife, Angie. And so it's really a song sort of acknowledging the fact that sometimes it ain't easy to live with somebody who wrestles with depression and has mood swings. And, you know, I mean, life is imperfect as it is. And when you put that kind of stuff on top of it, it can be challenging. So I like it. It's one of the poppier tunes on there. It, you know, she appreciated it. And when she first heard it, she got up and was dancing around. So I guess I did okay with it.
All right. That means it works. So let's listen to Ain't Easy by Danny Frank.
Try so hard. This damn depression's got a wicked grip on me. But some days I can hardly breathe. Then I see the sun shining in your eyes. Then I see the sun shining in your eyes.
And that was Ain't Easy by Danny Frank, our guest here on Simply Superior. We've got time for one more, which has to be the title track, Smoky Gold. You're not advocating a not yet quite legal substance in Wisconsin or Minnesota, right? Are you?
That's correct, although when you say that, it makes me think perhaps I should try to patent a strain.
Or patent the name, yeah, right. Somebody's going to be looking for a brand name, you know, put the register mark on it, right?
Exactly. Free CD with every order. Smoky Gold is one of the places that means a lot to me, the Boundary Waters. And I've spent a lot of time up there. And Sigurd Olsen writes about smoky gold, which is what he refers to the tamarack trees in the fall, and that yellow, rusty color that they take on when the leaves are changing. And, you know, tamaracks are unique because they're the only deciduous conifer, meaning that it's a coniferous tree like a pine tree where the needles and leaves actually change. And so, you know, I got that sort of in my head after a fall trip that I had taken there. So it's sort of a love song that I wrote for the Boundary Waters. It's a pretty jazzy tune, and I think you're going to enjoy it.
All right. We've been speaking with Danny Frey. By day, a mild manner, director of the trio program at UWS, University of Wisconsin-Superior. And when evening comes and other times, a fixture on the Twin Ports music scene. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
And here's Smoky Gold by Danny Frey.
When you came into my life, baby, well, my heart just skipped a beat, and I needed you more than you could ever know. You made me feel complete, 'cause I was going down, going down. And it's time for me across the water, where I can sit beneath the leaves of smoky gold and hear that high and lonesome call. Well, every day is a new day, just like old Charlie said, which means that we get up and we try and try again. And after all these years, you'd think we'd have it figured out. Some things more than others take a long time to come around.
Welcome back to Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington, and I'm joined by Brooks Johnson of the Star Tribune's North Report team. Hello, Brooks.
Hi, Robin.
And our own Superior-based reporter for Wisconsin Public Radio News, Danielle Kading. Hi, Danny.
Hi, Robin.
So, Brooks, our first half of this program was about historical events of the Freedom Rides and the Greyhound Bus Museum in Hibbing. There's a historic edifice in Duluth that's set to get a makeover.
Yes, it has historic in its name, in fact. Duluth's historic Old Central High School, that iconic landmark with the clock tower right downtown, it's going to be sold, and for $3 million, we found out recently. A purchase agreement was finally released. There have been plans to convert the building into a 121 mixed-income apartment complex. So this is a very, very old building. In 1892, it was built, and it was used as a high school until 1971. And now listeners may know that there's another Duluth Central High School, and that's on the city's hillside. And that is also up for sale, but no movement yet. However, the district is planning to spend $31.5 million to build new district offices, because until now, the historic Old Central has served as the headquarters for the Duluth School District.
All right. Well, not quite as historic, but another public edifice that costs public money is Spirit Mountain. How are things looking there from a city money management point of view?
Yes, well, a big announcement recently from Duluth Mayor Emily Larson. She proposed investing $24 million into Spirit Mountain, which is owned by the city. And about half that money would come from the state under a bonding proposal, so no guarantees that actually comes. And then the other $12 million would come from half from the city in a bond and half from Spirit Mountain, who would use its own revenues to cover its debt payments. It'd be the largest investment in the mountain since it was created as a recreation area in 1973. In that time, the city has spent a total of about $20 million in tourism taxes and issued just about $19 million in bonds to support operations. So this would be the major generational overhaul that the mountain needs, according to a task force and consultant that was brought on and issued a report earlier this year. So they're talking about, you know, tearing down old lifts and putting up a new high-speed one, really just optimizing service, getting prices where they need to be, checking lift tickets, and a number of other things, which adds up pretty quickly. You know, still on the table is the possibility to lease this out to a private operator. There's a lot that has to happen first to find out if that can happen. That's the most common way we see ski resorts, including Lutzen, operate on public land.
Well, back to our historical theme. Grandma's Marathon is a pretty historic event. And this year, is it getting back to normal, getting back to its history?
I sure hope so. It's right now, you know, with restrictions easing in Minnesota, Grandma's Marathon announced that they are going to allow spectators after all, and there will even be post-race celebrations allowed, including live music. So it seems as though, you know, we're being rewarded for getting our vaccines and meeting these targets that the governor has set with a little taste of normalcy in Duluth. Last year, it was run entirely virtual. The in-person marathon was canceled entirely, and this year, they're bringing it back in a phased approach. It is the largest marathon, too, that is being held in this early post-pandemic. Is it too early to say that? Post-pandemic era. So all eyes on Duluth as we see how we can safely hold this with spectators, with events in June, as you know, we're expected to see thousands of people come into town and hopefully give a little kick to the tourism industry.
Okay. Well, Danny, even if Grandma's is getting back to almost normal, there's still some COVID contretemps happening on the Wisconsin side of the border.
Yeah, well, this week, you know, Republican lawmakers from Western and Northwestern Wisconsin kind of have been talking about their intentions to ban mandatory COVID-19 testing and vaccination at University of Wisconsin System campuses, which would include UW-Superior. State Senator Rob Stafschultz, who represents Western Wisconsin, and also Representative Gay Magnifici, who represents areas of Northwestern Wisconsin, are shopping around a bill where they're looking to ban the state's universities and technical colleges from requiring regular coronavirus testing or vaccination. There were some concerns expressed by these lawmakers that, you know, maybe the UW system's policy for requiring testing was infringing or invading on students' medical privacy. And in response, UW systems spokesperson Mark Pitch has said that, you know, this mandatory testing is pretty essential for enabling a safe return to in-campus learning in the fall. You know, they have a goal of 75% in-person classes this coming fall. And so in order to do that, they say that testing is a key part of that effort. And it's likely that if this bill moves forward, that it would be vetoed by Governor Tony Evers.
All right. Well, as the state lawmakers continue their political wrangling, Wisconsin's Native American tribes are giving an update of their concerns.
Yeah, and there were a number of them that were expressed by Lactus Lambeau tribal president John D. Johnson Sr. He was the one that was giving this year's State of the Tribes address before lawmakers at the state capitol. And some of the things that he touched on were increased drug abuse due to the COVID-19 pandemic. He said that fentanyl and methamphetamine abuse continue to impact northern Wisconsin as well as the entire country. So, you know, abuse of prescription drugs, that's something that he would like to see more funding under the state budget to go towards regional mental health centers, which Governor Tony Evers has proposed under his next 2-year budget. But it's unclear whether Republicans would support those proposals. They've already stripped hundreds of Governor Evers' proposals from the budget. You know, other things that Lactus Lambeau President Johnson touched on included harassment and racism that tribal members encounter as they defend their federal treaty rights to hunt, fish, and gather. He also called on schools and organizations to retire the use of race-based mascots, which are still used by about 30 school districts in Wisconsin. And there's been a bit of back and forth over that. among administrations in the last decade. Former Democratic Governor Jim Doyle had signed a bill in 2010 that made it difficult for schools to retain these mascots, but then later that was reversed by Governor Scott Walker, citing concerns over free speech. So Johnson is hoping that this year there will be more momentum under that, and Governor Evers has proposed setting aside some money under the budget to help schools replace race-based nicknames. And Johnson also touched on mining, saying that basically any mining in Wisconsin should be rejected until they know that there are protections in place for public health, safety, and natural resources.
All right. Well, lastly, the loon is a state bird of Minnesota. What's happening with them in Wisconsin?
Well, yeah, in Wisconsin, we had an unfortunate event in the central portion of the state near Anago, where a lot of loons just fell from the sky one evening because of icy conditions that caused loons to be coated with ice, and they just dropped out. The Raptor Education Group near Anago rehabbed and released 8 loons that fell. They had seen injuries, including internal bleeding and collapsed lungs in some of these birds. And so it's really good to see that they've been able to restore some of these birds to full health because, you know, in recent decades, there's been a gradual decline of loon populations throughout the region. And in Oneida County, where the Loon Project studies their population, they've seen loon numbers plummet about 22% in the past 25 years. So it's good to be doing whatever we can to keep these birds up in the air and flying.
Right. Let's hope they get back on the wing. We've been speaking with Danielle Kading, the Superior-based reporter for WPR News. Thank you, Danny.
Thanks, Robin.
And Brooks Johnson of the Star Tribune's North Report team. Thank you, Brooks.
Thanks, Robin.
You can read the stories by Brooks and the Star Tribune's entire Twin Ports Bureau at www.startribune.com/northreport, and be sure to subscribe to their local newsletter. Next week,
we only had a suitcase for two.
We'll have one last visit, locally anyway, with one less guest before they head out to a new life and stardom, we hope, in California. That's it for this edition of Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington. We leave you with more of the music of Danny Frank, something that should be familiar. Stay safe, everyone.
There's a town on a lake not far from here. We got good coffee shops and plenty of beers. It's Simply Superior. There's a show that's playing on your radio about places to see and people you know. It's Simply Superior. Now come on down and let's sing it. We got a little more ways to go. And if you want to be part of it, I'll just tune in for the show. There's a town on a lake not far from here. We got good coffee shops and plenty of beers. It's Simply Superior. It's Simply Superior. It's Simply Superior.